It's Friday, August 14th, 2015, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Coming up, the cleanup continues after Wednesday's massive explosion in Tianjin, China. A powerful bombing kills dozens in Iraq, and the U.S. Embassy officially reopens in Havana, Cuba later today. And two rap superstars face a day in court. A series of enormous explosions at a hazardous materials warehouse in the northeastern Chinese port city of Tianjin late Wednesday has killed at least 50 people, including 17 firemen. Pictures and videos showed gigantic plumes of fire and a mushroom cloud that dwarfed nearby high-rise buildings and sent out a massive shockwave that rattled residents several kilometers from the blast site. Chinese state media say at least 700 people were injured, with 71 in serious condition. VOA Beijing correspondent Bill Ide was in Tianjin Thursday and says the devastation was widespread.
The cause is still unknown, but the aftermath resembles a war zone. Massive pieces of debris were hurled far from the blast sites, causing extensive damage. Windows are blown out for kilometers around. Many buildings are now considered structurally unsafe. The damage will take months to repair. Some residents were allowed to take personal belongings from their homes, but what they will do now is less certain. One unscathed young migrant worker escaped with his desktop computer.
We are all workers. We will wait and see what our bosses say. If there's nothing to do, then I will probably go back to my hometown.
Some were still in a daze. VOA met a truck driver surnamed Zhang who was driving his damaged car from the blast site and talked about his narrow escape.
It is all a blur to me now. When everyone else ran, I just followed everyone else. We ran in one direction and then back around again without thinking.
Smoke continued to billow from the site Thursday as authorities expressed concerns over containing the hazardous chemicals believed to have been kept near the blast site. With many here still just coming to grips with what happened, the death toll is expected to continue to rise. Bill Ide, VOA News, Tianjin.
Here in the United States, the White House sent its condolences. Deputy spokesman Ned Price called the explosions a tragedy and praised the first responders working to help the injured. It's time now to check out what's trending on social media. International Edition's G. Abby Lee is in the studio with the latest on Tianjin. G, any notable people tweeting about this accident?
Hi, Dave. Well, high-level Washington officials are not tweeting about the blast, but the UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon's spokesperson did. Mr. Ban's spokesperson's office is on Twitter at UN_spokesperson. The account tweeted, hashtag UNSG, deeply saddened by loss of life and injuries to scores of people as a result of deadly explosions in Tianjin, China.
Okay, so?
Dave, actually, one person that I expected to hear a statement from is Pope Francis, but he hasn't tweeted anything about it yet. And moving on to what Xinhua News Agency tweeted, it's on Twitter at XH News. It wrote, air quality normal after hashtag Tianjin blast, toxic fumes within national standards. Dave, that tweet got a lot of attention because China is not exactly known for its clean air. So some people replied to the tweet with simply, quote, national standards, unquote, to show sarcasm. And others elaborated a bit more. A user with a handle at Hong Kong Hermit wrote, toxic fumes within national standards, so still deadly poisonous then? And there were so many other comments like that. Now, before I go, I want to mention that hashtag Tianjin was used nearly 45,000 times, and hashtag Tianjin Blast was used in more than 6,500 tweets during the last 24 hours. That's according to the social media analytics website Topsy.
All right, thanks a lot, G. That was G. Abby Lee. She is on Twitter, at G, and that's J-E-E, Abby, A-B-B-E-Y, and Lee, L-E. You can always follow the latest coverage on the explosion and its aftermath by logging on to our website, www.voanews.com. That's also where you can post your comments. This is VOA.
Hello. I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia, debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Hi there, this is Larry London, the host of Border Crossings. Nice to meet you. I would love for you to join us each and every day, Monday through Friday, on Border Crossings for requests, dedications, giveaways, and surprise guests. We've got some of today's biggest hitmakers coming into the studio to talk about their music. And all we're missing is you. So join us Monday to Friday, right here on Border Crossings. This is the Voice of America.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Iraqi officials say a powerful truck bomb tore through a Shiite neighborhood of Baghdad on Thursday, killing at least 67 people in one of the capital's largest bomb attacks in months. Dozens more were wounded when a refrigerated truck packed with explosives was detonated just after dawn at the crowded Jamila market in Sadr City. The Islamic State group claimed responsibility for the attack. Graham Bannerman is a scholar at the Middle East Institute in Washington. International Edition's Jeffrey Young asked him what's behind this attack and what it means for the U.S. role in the region.
Well, I think it's a question of the Islamic State is trying to attack the Shias all over the Middle East, and this is just one more example of that. I mean, the bombing attacks in Saudi Arabia were against Shias, and in Kuwait were against Shias. They see this as a existential struggle between the Shias and the Sunnis, and this is just another example of that.
I also get the sense that because, obviously, we have Haider al-Hadi, who is Shia and a member of the Dawa Party, running the government in Baghdad, and we have such a huge bombing taking place in the Iraqi capital, in a sense, isn't this also kind of a slight toward the government and al-Hadi in saying, you can't even protect your own capital?
Well, that's the purpose of all of these things, is to demonstrate that the Shia government of Iraq, which the Islamic State sees as governing the country, cannot protect its people, cannot govern, and therefore should be replaced. It's part of that undermining of the current Iraqi government by the Islamic State.
Outgoing U.S. Army Chief of Staff General Ray Odierno said on Wednesday that Washington should consider embedding American troops with Iraqi forces if the Baghdad government doesn't make progress against the Islamic State. Well, we have a few technical problems here, don't we? Isn't there a matter of a status of forces agreement and indemnification of American forces?
Well, it's more than technical problems. There's the problem for our military is they've been assigned a task in Iraq that they don't think they can accomplish with the current restrictions. Therefore, being good soldiers that they are, they want to accomplish their task, and this is one way they think they can do that. The problem is Washington, as an institution, does not have the political will at this point to get more involved in Iraq. In fact, there's grave reservations among many people in Washington saying we've been there too long, it's been too much, and our policy cannot succeed. And there's also a part of this game of blaming the other party. The Democrats are saying the problem is the Republicans went in 2003, and the Republicans saying no, the problem is that that the president withdrew the troops too early in 2011. And so therefore we're having this political battle in Washington, and there is no will here to take a more vigorous military actions at this time.
Let me add another factor to this whole thing. The vital necessity for coordinated strategy between American forces, if they're going to be there, and Iraqi forces. What about this? We haven't really had a very coordinated strategy so far in this fight against the Islamic State, have we?
We have attempted to coordinate our bombing with their needs. The problem we have, though, is the Iranian factor. Because this government in Baghdad is a Shia government and closely aligned with Iran, we find ourselves being on the same side of the battle with a country that we don't have very much in common with at this time, and of which is the political football in Washington right now as the treaty with Iran is being debated vigorously in Congress and around the city.
Graham Bannerman is a scholar with the Middle East Institute here in Washington. He spoke with International Edition's Jeffrey Young. Coming up, a new day dawns for U.S.-Cuba relations. Alexis Christophorus will stop by to update us on business news. And two of rap music superstars will be in court in October over a 16-year-old lawsuit. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Russian microbiologists have found that a new strain of yeast was quite effective in treating wastewater that contains certain toxic chemical compounds. Conducting their research at peat bogs in western Siberia, the scientists from Kazan Federal University found that this new yeast strain was effective in eliminated nitro compounds. These organic compounds are commonly used in such products as explosives, insecticides, polymers, dyes, and some medications. The scientists focused on a waste product called trinitrotoline, which is known to be a serious health threat. High numbers of this nitro compound waste are produced by industries such as oil refineries and military equipment manufacturers. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. The next phase of the historic normalization of relations between the United States and Cuba takes place in Havana Friday. That's where U.S. Marines will raise the American flag outside the newly opened U.S. Embassy. Secretary of State John Kerry and other dignitaries are expected to attend. But the Obama administration is deflecting criticism from Cuban and Cuban-American dissidents that they have been left out of the process. VOA State Department correspondent Pam Dawkins will travel with Secretary Kerry, and she told me that opening the new embassy is just the first step on a long road.
The day will start with what U.S. officials call a government-to-government flag-raising ceremony at the U.S. Embassy in Havana. One interesting note is that the flag will be raised by the U.S. Marines who lowered it 54 years ago. In addition to Secretary of State Kerry, Assistant Secretary for Western Hemisphere Roberta Jacobson, a number of U.S. lawmakers will be among those in attendance. Later in the day, a second, larger ceremony will take place at the residence of U.S. Chief of Missions Jeffrey De Laurentiis. This one will include a range of civil society members, including political, human rights activists, and media activists.
How will reopening this embassy affect the average Cuban?
That's an interesting question. An analyst said to me that for the average Cuban, there will be not much change in their day-to-day life because the U.S. trade embargo on Cuba remains in effect. That would need a congressional vote to be lifted. But the reopening will allow more Americans to travel to Cuba and give Cubans more access to the U.S. Embassy in Havana.
How will this stepped-up engagement with the United States impact efforts to address Cuba's human rights record?
In a briefing Wednesday, a senior State Department official said the move to reestablish ties would hopefully allow the U.S. to accelerate its engagement with Cuba on issues such as human rights. The Cuban government has continued its mass arrest of dissidents, a move that has angered many Cuban Americans. Some Cuban Americans have questioned whether the U.S. should have held off on normalizing ties until Cuba made more human rights reforms. But the U.S. government's position has been that direct engagement is the best way to address these issues.
That's VOA State Department correspondent Pam Dawkins. You can follow her coverage of the official ceremony to open the U.S. Embassy in Havana by logging on to our website, www.voanews.com. Retail sales rebounded in July with Americans buying more cars, restaurant meals, and building supplies. The Commerce Department said Thursday that retail sales climbed 0.6% last month after a flat level in June. Our business reporter, Alexis Christophorus in New York, told me that even though Americans bought more cars, that increase did not give any bounce to the oil market because of a glut of crude.
Well, unfortunately, that report did very little to help boost oil in the last session. It sank to a six-year low. Once again, we saw that happen back in March as rising output from OPEC continues to put pressure on prices. We found out that the OPEC nations pumped the most in 3 years in July. So that slide in prices is really not stopping the OPEC nations from continuing to pump the way they have been. And of course, on top of that, we've got China's devaluation of the yuan. And that just increased concern that a slowdown in China, which is the world's number one energy consumer, will just make this glut of oil on the market that much worse. And you mentioned retail sales rising 0.6%. It's not a fabulous number, but many analysts believe it's strong enough to convince the Federal Reserve to go ahead with that promised interest rate hike in September.
Speaking of the Chinese currency fluctuations, a part of what that does is it makes luxury goods outside of China more expensive, things like Rolex watches or gold jewelry. How is that going to affect the gold market, and what are we seeing in that precious metal?
Well, the precious metal had a really nice week, but it snapped that five-day winning streak in the last session because the dollar ticked higher because of that upbeat report from the Commerce Department on retail sales. And this is also despite headwinds provided by the shaky economy in China, which has actually driven a lot of investors to gold in the recent days as a safe haven when other asset allocations are not performing as well. And we've also seen investors really around the world put their money into things like gold as their equity markets fall. We saw December gold close down $8, a drop of 0.7%, finishing at $1,115.60 an ounce, David.
That's business correspondent Alexis Christophorus. We welcome your questions or comments on our business reports. You can send a tweet to us at @VOA_IE, and you can tweet Alexis directly. She's at Alexis TV News. Rappers Jay-Z and Timbaland will be in court next month, or actually in October, that is, in a 16-year-old lawsuit over their mega hit Big Pimpin'. I spoke with VOA's Soul Lounge host Shauna Renee about the lawsuit, which has the rappers embroiled in a morass involving Egyptian law, song rights, movie soundtracks, and millions of dollars.
Okay, so let's start at the beginning. Jay-Z and Timbaland were in the studio, and Timbaland grabbed a CD that contained a Middle Eastern-inspired riff, or just a tune that he believed to be public domain, which meant that it was available to use without any condition, any payment whatsoever. So it turns out, however, that that song was from a 1960s Egyptian film called Fata Ahlami, and that, in fact, the song did need to be paid for. EMI, who is responsible for rights and all these kinds of things, said that they indeed had to pay for use of this portion of the song. So Timbaland and Jay-Z and the record company paid $100,000 for the use of this very short version or piece of the song, and thought that at this point, all was well. This happens all the time, especially in hip hop. We sample music, bits of music, you pay for it, you keep it moving. Well, it turns out that the family members of the original composer, Bahli Hamdi, said that they, in fact, are owed more money because EMI did not have a right to allow Timbaland and Jay-Z to use this sample in what we have to say is probably one of Jay-Z's biggest songs.
TMC, Jigga Man. You know I thug them, hug them, love them, leave them, but I don't trust or need them. Take them out the hood, keep them looking good, with diamond cuffs that'll freeze them. First time they fuss, I'm breezing. Talk about what's the reasons. I'm a pimpin' every sense in the word, mama. Better trust and believe them. In a cup where I keep them, till I need the word, till I need to beat it up, then it's BB, then I'm picking them up, then I play with it quick in the truck.
There's no denying that they used this portion of the song.
Right.
They admitted they paid for it. Now, the question is how much was made from it and whether or not the family has a right to say or can say legally, we did not give EMI permission to allow Timbaland and Jay-Z to use. And Timbaland and Jay-Z will be testifying in this case. So this is going to be something that we'll be talking about for a while.
Oh, boy, the drama continues. Well, if you have any comments on this, you can send a tweet to Shauna. She's at VOA Lady DJ. You can also send one to at VOA underscore music. You can send one to us at VOA underscore IE. And, of course, you can catch Shauna in the Soul Lounge. Log on to our website. That's voanews.com.
Southern rap here from Sario. Come straight about the black barrio. Make some meal up off of sorry. What? Now sit back and beat my scenario. Oops, my bad, that's my scenario. No, I can't fucking scare it. What? Now every time, every place, everywhere we go. Well, stop pointing and say, there he go. Now these folks know we carry more heat than a little bit. We don't pull it out over little shit. And if you catch a lick when I spit, then it won't be a little hit. Go read a book, you illiterate son of a bitch. Step up your vocab. Don't be surprised if your fam. Out with me and you see it's coming down on your slam.
Smoking hot.
Thanks for joining us for VOA's International Edition. For more on the stories you've heard, including in-depth reports, photos, and videos, log on to our website, www.voanews.com. We welcome your questions or comments. You can find us on Twitter at VOA underscore IE. Tracy Carter directed our program. Zineb Abdelrahman was our engineer. For all the folks at VOA, I'm David Byrd in Washington. Thanks for listening.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In China's Zhejiang province, authorities are carrying out a campaign to remove crosses from thousands of church roofs, spires, and archways. Under the purported justification of building code violations, more than 1,000 crosses have reportedly been toppled or stripped away over the past year and a half. In addition, since 2014, more than 400 churches have reportedly faced partial or total demolition by the government, claiming the buildings were illegal structures. The U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, an independent bipartisan federal commission, noted that many Christian believers in Zhejiang regard the campaign to remove the crosses and raise churches as directly targeting their religion. And they have not been silent about it. In July, Chinese Catholic officials described the dismantling of crosses on churches as an evil act. Christians took to the streets in protest in the southeastern city of Guangzhou. The Associated Press reported that in a rare move, China's semi-official Christian associations, which are supposed to ensure the ruling Communist Party's control over Protestant and Catholic groups, denounced the campaign against the crosses, claiming it risks alienating Christians from the government. Christians are not the only religious group targeted by officials in China. In its report, the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom noted that in the past year, there have been unprecedented violations against Uyghur Muslims, Tibetan Buddhists, and Falun Gong practitioners, in addition to Christians. Since 1999, the U.S. Secretary of State has designated China as a country of particular concern for severe violations of religious freedom. In its most recently published report, the State Department said that despite a constitutional guarantee that Chinese citizens enjoy freedom of religious belief, the government harassed, assaulted, detained, arrested, or sentenced to prison a number of religious adherents for activities reported to be related to their religious beliefs and practices. practices. Secretary of State John Kerry has called freedom of religion a universal value ingrained in every human heart. He also pointed out that when countries undermine or attack religious freedom, they not only unjustly threaten those whom they target, they also threaten their country's own stability. The United States continues to call on all countries, including China, to live up to their international human rights commitments regarding religious freedom and allow their citizens the full exercise of this fundamental right and moral imperative.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.